Dang, I want you to hold on for me there from Mississippi. I have a very, mamma mia, hola, si, senor, interesting guest with me. I have with me Sean Munkachi, I think. And Sean has been teaching and coaching high school for the last 25 years. And Sean and his class joined me today. Sean, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you, you guys, for coming on. I really appreciate it. So the class is with you?
They are. I have 25. They're all waving. You'll have to take my word for it.
All right.
25 primarily juniors and seniors.
Good morning, 25 juniors and seniors. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Thank you all for coming on. I absolutely appreciate it. Sean, what do you teach?
I teach social studies. This class is a criminology class, but I primarily teach world studies. But regardless of the subject, we teach students how to think. You know, we're teaching students that it's important to pay attention to what's going on. And I think having this conversation with you is certainly going to reinforce that.
Absolutely. I hope so. So you know who Dylan is, right?
Sorry, excuse me?
No, is it Dylan or Dylan? Oh, you know who Dylan is, right?
Yeah, it's Dylan.
Yeah, I call him Dylan.
One of my favorite students. We'll have to have another show to talk about Dylan, though. He's fantastic.
He's more than a notion, that's for sure. Well, I appreciate him getting you on. I noticed that most students, by the time they finish high school and college, they are dumbed down, demoralized, and brainwashed. A lot of them turn away from Christianity. What happens to them from the time they enter school to the end of college? Why are they being dumbed down and brainwashed? They don't. By the time they get out of school, they don't think for themselves. They have no original ideas at all. What happens to them?
I think you could certainly rephrase the question, and I think the students here primarily are shaking their heads. But basically what we see is oftentimes in some schools, certainly not this school. This is a school in suburban Maine. It's right outside of Portland. These students that I have that I'm looking at are very bright. They do know how to think for themselves. And I think there's oftentimes a portrayal that they don't. But when you have conversations with them, oftentimes people choose not to have conversations with them. I think you find that they are very creative. Unfortunately, and I think most people would agree, Republican, Democrat, or Libertarian, there are some students that need to work on their grit. You know, they need to work on taking chances. And I think a lot of people confuse that with a lack of effort or maybe even apathy. But these students, they do go out. They are achievers. They're volunteering. They work in the community. I see them after school. I see them on the athletic field. I see them in their places of employment. And they really do have discipline and they do have drive.
Do they know that? Do they know who President Donald Trump is?
In my class, yes, certainly they do. And we have, I mean, obviously we're coming from a state like Maine, which is one of the whitest states and also one of the least religious states. So to hear your perspective certainly is the other end of the spectrum. But these students really do a great job. They work. I think a lot of times school may not be the best marker. I often see, you know, being handed down from our administration without being too controversial, we're hitting the bullseye, but sometimes it's the bullseye on the wrong target.
Are they aware that this whole impeachment of the Great White Hope, I call it Donald Trump, the Great White Hope, are they aware that what the liberal media and the Democrats, the Never Trumpers and the right-o Republicans— are they aware that the Democrats and others are liars and they hate the president because he is a straight, white, conservative male of power and they want him out and that the Democrats have nothing to offer? They just hate the president. Are the kids aware of that?
They are now, apparently.
Are you guys aware of that?
They are. Basically, we talk about everything.
But do they know that, though? Are they aware?
MSNBC, We read the Washington Post. But I go to Breitbart every day. These students see all perspectives. I don't think that they would agree with some of the terms that you use to describe the media or Donald Trump uses to describe the media. There are some.
But do they know? Are they aware that you cannot trust the liberal media at all? They are liars?
Well, I think my students as a whole are aware that they don't trust anybody 100%. If you look behind me, I've got a poster with a quote from Pink Floyd, "Mother, should I trust the government?" I think we need to give the government the benefit of the doubt, but to say unilaterally, unequivocally, that we should trust them, no, but we shouldn't trust corporate America. And the same token, they shouldn't trust me, nor should they trust you 100%. We are coming from a biased, prejudicial perspective. That is the reality.
Why shouldn't they trust you? You're the teacher.
No, because I'm biased. You know, I mean, for me to stand up here and say that I'm giving you a completely neutral lesson is a farce or a fallacy. The reality is I am prejudicial. I am biased. And I admit that, because when I admit that, I can consequently keep my biases in check. Now, I am not biased or prejudiced against any race or religion or sexual orientation, but certainly I have biases because of how I grew up and where I grew up and what my parents did for work and the books
Republicans and Democrat children in your classroom?
Absolutely, yes.
And are the Republican kids afraid to let it be known that they support President Trump and that they are Republicans?
No. There are students that walk through the halls with—
Let me hear the applause. Let me hear the applaud of the kids who support President Trump. Right on. That's right.
That's about 50%.
That's good. And do they know that there is no such thing? And I'm black at the Ace of Spades. I grew up I grew up on a plantation down in Alabama. I grew up under the Jim Crow laws. And I want to know, are they aware that there is no such thing as racism, sexism, homophobiaism, Islamophobiaism, deadbeat-dad-ism, or anti-Semitism that is either right or wrong? It's a spiritual battle. It has nothing to do with color or male or female. You're either right or you're wrong. No such thing as racism and all that crap. Are the kids aware of that?
No, because I don't think they would agree with that statement.
There are some that would agree with it, right?
Like this. So we're in a state very white, obviously. But
and keep it white.
Aware of what's happening in places like Lewiston. We've got a tremendous number of Somali immigrants coming in to Lewiston. So they see how these individuals are treated differently. We come from what was a primarily Caucasian or white school. We are getting more and more diverse literally every day.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's unfortunate.
No, but again, if I have a bowl of soup, I don't want my bowl of soup to be bland. I want the spices in my soup. You know, if you go back, we can go back versus Bollinger, Jesse.
But, Sean, it's a horrible
education. What kind of an education are you going to get in a classroom with nothing but a bunch of rich white kids?
You're
going to
get a good education.
When you say there's no such thing as, and this is coming from a sophomore student.
Okay, let me just say first, Sean, let me just follow up one point. Those Somalian so-called refugees that are coming in, it's a horrible mistake to bring those people into our country, because those people are coming here with values that they that doesn't match the ones in America. Those people are coming here, they're hating white people, they're very violent people, they have no morals and no character. Such as that woman, Ilhan Omar, when I become president, she's going to be the first one that I ship back to Africa. Mommy Africa, she should not be in my country. So these people should not be coming. They're very violent, evil people.
I think a lot of your decisions and probably a lot of your followers are making decisions based on emotion.
I am not an emotional person.
When you look at the facts, when you look at the data,
I'm not into emotion.
Lewiston is a unique situation. And these individuals, I work, so I have two jobs. I'm a contractor after school.
Right.
And when I work up in Lewiston, the individuals that I encounter are as friendly as any Caucasian or any other denomination.
Do they know you white?
They have conversations.
Do they think you black?
I am a little tan, but no, I don't think they think I'm black.
It wouldn't be the same if they knew you were white, believe me.
Well,
because they hate white people. They hate Christians.
These people are coming to Lewiston, and I don't know if you've ever been to Lewiston, Maine, and I don't mean any offense to Lewiston. Lewiston is a town that's struggling. These individuals that are coming from Somalia are saying Lewiston is heaven. If you're calling Lewiston heaven, that raises the question of where in the world are you coming from and how bad was it there?
That's not a reason to let them come here, though. That's not a reason. These people hate us.
You know, on one hand, you're talking about family and how important it is to have a father figure. These people are coming over to provide for their children. That's the sole reason.
But why can't they rise up and do that in their own country? I don't want to take care of them.
In theory, that's fantastic. You know, let's provide those opportunities in Mexico so that they can have a stable life and they can earn a livable wage. But
that's not our responsibility. It's not our responsibility to provide that for them. They have to learn to take care of themselves instead of looking to someone else.
I believe that as well. Yes, I am. And I think I spoke to Nick last night. You know, I am not some stereotypical bleeding heart liberal. I work very, very hard for my money. And I don't want someone that's lazy just getting my money because they feel like they deserve it.
Yeah.
So I think we can all agree that we're not providing necessarily the cash dollars, but we're providing the opportunity.
No, and we take care of them, too. They're on welfare. We pay for their houses. We pay for their health care. I'm sick of doing that. We pay for their out-of-wedlock babies and all kind of crap. I want my money, Sean.
The statistics that we have in Maine show that the people that do come over and get social services are more apt to leave and less apt to be dependent on them than oftentimes their Caucasian counterparts.
No, that's not true. I wouldn't believe that.
They might be on those services for a year or two, but then they begin providing that economy that they're in Lewiston with some valuable pieces of information.
So, Sean, you have a question for the student?
Yeah, so I've got a student that's going to ask a question.
Okay.
Go ahead, Manny.
I just don't understand how you could make a blanket statement like about all Somalian people, like when it's, you know, like it's obviously not every single one is going to hate white people or has bad intentions. And years ago, like, you know, people would have made blanket statements about you because you're black. They would have said you're, you know, a criminal, you're a bad person, even if you weren't. Like, and how would that make you feel if you knew, you know, you were just like a everyday hardworking American, you know, just like everyone else, but people were not giving you the same opportunity because of your skin color and putting you under this category of all black people are criminals, gangsters, or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't understand how you can make a blanket statement about Somalians.
That's a good question.
Same situation.
That's a good question. Prior to the civil rights movement, most black people were good, decent Americans. They got married. It was abortion and all that stuff was unheard of. Black people did not hate white people in those days. And it wasn't until the civil rights movement started that the family broke up, the government became the daddy of the family, and the black race hustler became the head of the people. And now most black people are violent people. They hate white people. They hate God. They're very violent. So if most black people are doing that, and I'm a black man, I'm out there, you're going to naturally assume or be careful because you don't know which black is the good one or which is the bad because most are out of control. So I would understand that.
So you, I mean, obviously, I've looked at some of your background. You know, what would you say to the individual that says you are the definition of plausible deniability? If you get some kind of racist Republican and he or she says,
no such thing as a racist Republican.
Look at that guy. He's saying the exact same thing and he's black. How do you respond to that?
I would first say that there's no such thing as a racist Republican. Racism does not exist. It's either good or evil. You have good people influenced by God and you have evil people influenced by Satan. And so I would first tell them there's no such thing as racism. And I will also tell them that I am an American. I have the First Amendment. I can say and whatever I want to say. I have the right to freedom of speech. And I would never allow anyone to take that away from me.
We teach students day in and day out that they can't make blanket statements.
But they can.
By its cover? No, you can't.
Why not?
The data doesn't support it. You're making statements based on emotion, based on your background.
No. It's not based on emotion. It's based on truth. And no one has a right to tell the kids what they can and cannot say, because if they do, they're going to grow up cowards. And that's why white people are under attack today, because white people are the most hated people on this side of heaven for no reason. And white people are afraid to speak up for fear of being called racist. And that should not be that way, because if it wasn't for whites, there would be no America. And so what I want white people to do is send all the colored people back to where they came.
So another question just came in from a senior male. How can you say you feel very little emotion, but you hold what sounds like a lot of hate for people who are looking for the same opportunity as you were looking for 50 years ago?
Well, I wasn't. First of all, men are not emotional. A man who is emotional is a woman. It's not natural for males to be that way. Secondly, so any man that has anger is an emotional female in a man's body, right? But I didn't come here looking for opportunities. I was born in America. I love my country, and I want to keep it that way. That's why I don't want all of these foreigners coming in taking away the opportunity for American citizens. I am a believer that America should come first. That's why I want a big, beautiful wall around the borders to stop all these illegal aliens. I don't want to take care of these people. They need to learn to take care of themselves. Otherwise, we're just going to have more of what's happening with the blacks. If you notice that most black people, not all, but most black people are relying on the government instead of relying on themselves. It wasn't that way when I was growing up. Black people relied on themselves and not the government.
Again, I would say the data does not support that.
I wouldn't trust the data because the so-called people who are making the data are lying people. They dumb you down. They lie to you. They cannot be trusted. The intellectuals cannot be trusted.
From my experience, and my brother is a scientist, and when he speaks, he is not political. He is apolitical. These scientists, these researchers, they're not looking for one answer or another. They are just hyper-focused on, let's gather the data and let's try and see what is coming on. Now, another question just came in. Why do you fear these people who are different from what you determine to be your norm?
I don't fear them. There is a wrong and a right, and these people are wrong. And you shouldn't be able to convince, especially Christians and men and women who believe in God, you should not be able to convince them that a wrong is a right. It's not right. And I'm saying that it's not right. It's not right for men to know, or male to know that they are male, but act like a girl, or a girl to know that she is a girl, but act like a boy. And everybody say, oh, that's nice. That's not right. It's not good. It's evil to agree with evil.
But in your brain, that's the way you see it.
It's not in my brain. It's
a sexual male. But when you look at somebody that is coming from an opposing viewpoint, in their mind, they're thinking, wow, it's weird that you like members of the opposite sex. So another question just came in regard to that. Who are you to determine what's wrong and what's right? One of the things that we saw in one of your articles was you apologized to your parents for the mistakes that they made. Who are you to determine that they were mistakes, as opposed to they were doing the best that they could with the resources that they had? So who determines right and wrong?
That's a good question. There is an order to life, and that order is God in Christ, Christ in man, man over woman, and woman over children. And when that order is broken and the mother take over the kids, or she turn them away from the fathers, she turned them to them. And mothers, women, not all, but most women are angry and they hate the man. And so they would turn his children away from him toward her by playing victim. The mother's not going to tell you, your father left because he couldn't handle me. I was out of control. He didn't know how to deal with me. They give the impression that the fathers leave because the fathers didn't love the children, and that's not true. And so God created the man to become to be the head of the woman and the children and guide them in the right way to go. Because when women take over, it's nothing but destruction to come.
I appreciate that you speak
because women don't have men.
You got to understand the overwhelming number of scientists would disagree with that as well.
Because they're dumb.
How are you so sure that these people are wrong?
They're dumb.
Anyone to be able to determine right and wrong. Also, Jesus was Jewish and wanted people to welcome immigrants and hold no hate in their heart.
Well, you should have hate, and that's why you go to your mother and forgive her. Because she has anger and she can't help it, right? And you become
I listened to a story last week that said, we're all born with hate.
No, hate that's not true.
Absolutely.
No.
The hate is hardwired in us, yet it's the software that
We're
not born like Mandela said.
Hey,
we're
Sean.
Not born without hate. Pre-wired to hate. That's what makes us competitive. That's the evolutionary process, which obviously you don't believe in evolution.
Sean.
So we can just call it social evolution.
Sean, where's Mandela now?
He's passed away.
I rest my case. But.
You know, I definitely appreciate those perspectives.
Let me tell you one thing real fast. We're not born with hate. We're born with love because God is love. And the way that we become angry is that when we become angry at our mothers because they're impatient and mothers don't have love because they get their love from the father. And when we resent our mothers, we become like our mother. You become like whomever you that can make you angry. And so, like, you become like her. That's not natural to be angry. But as an adult, you go and forgive because the mothers can't help themselves. Then God will forgive you and take the mother identity away from you and return you to your father. And then you become your natural self. We are not born with anger. God is love.
There's some research that came out. I can't remember the woman's first name. Her last name is Cohn, K-O-H-N. And she wanted desperately for her research to show that we were not born with hate.
We're not.
But it showed quite the contrary. We are competitive. In order for us to survive in the animal kingdom, we need to have some drive to get ahead. That creates competition. Competition definitely correlates with hate. The bell is ringing. My students are leaving. Everyone say thank you.
Thank you, students.
We appreciate your perspective. We will follow up for sure in the next class. I would love to invite you to Maine. Come with Dylan. Dylan knows this place better than anyone. And I would love to have a follow-up conversation as well. 25 minutes, I thought this morning. How are we going to cover 25 minutes? We covered 25 minutes pretty easily. And I would love to continue this conversation on behalf of the students.
Thank you, Sean. And I would love to come to Maine, go there to Maine and speak to you and the kids at any time. So I look forward to that. Thank you for having me in the class.
Our first stop is going to be Lewiston for some good Somali food.
All right, man. Thank you so much. And God bless you in the class. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Okay, now.
Bye.
Amazing. That was fun. That was amazing. That was Sean Munkauchi, right? Munkauchi. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Good discussion. What do you think about that, Joel?
That was fun. I liked the fact that the kids were asking questions.
Yeah, absolutely. When I've done a lot of work in the schools around here as well, and the kids ask questions like that, a lot of times the teacher don't like it, though. Sean seemed to be okay with it.
Yeah.
He didn't agree with it a lot, but he definitely allowed it to happen. Thank you, Sean. That was amazing.